Fellow Freedom fans, back David Allen Carmichael, the Faith and Freedom Show, going to talk about the issues of the day on a constitutional basis, biblical basis, the basis of right versus wrong today. Yes, I do. I have. You're going to have to hold your calls at 888-850-1872. This next segment, I've got a pre-recorded thing. I mentioned it in my last segment. What we're going to do for the next 12 minutes, you're going to listen to Chris Seipel. He's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. He runs this organization called Institute for Global Government. And he's, as I told my last caller on the break, I said, there are guys that are out there running the world behind the curtain. You know, the Wizard of Oz, I guess. I don't know. You know, there's guys pulling the strings, Dr. Mai, evil Dr. Mai of chaos, and or whoever it is pulling the strings. And there's folks that get, invited to some of these clubs to have influence. And I think Chris Seipel is one of those guys just going to go where God sends him, no matter who invites him. So tune in, take notes, give us a call at 888-850-1872 on the next segment. Tell us what you think. What influence have you and the Institute for Global Engagement had on U.S., NATO, Pakistan, or Karzai regime's policy? Have you had any, are you having any influence or discussion or showing any color on what they're thinking?
Sure. We're trying our hardest, David. My feeling is this. You've been taught not to talk about two things since you were a child. In polite company, assuming you keep polite company, and that's this, religion and politics, right? You just don't bring it up. But here's the bummer. In the 21st century, our national security exists at their intersection.
Yeah.
So you got to be smart about how you do that. The problem with the U.S., it's a tremendous irony. 90% of our people believe in something greater than themselves. In the Muslim world, at least 90% believe in God. There's no country in the West better positioned to engage the Muslim majority world, society to society. But our institutions, the State Department, etc., our institutions are so caught up in this don't talk about religion and politics, and if you do, you threaten the alleged separation between church and state, that now we're endangering our national security because of our inability to talk about these two issues.
Right.
So what we've tried to do is say, look, it has to be discussed. It's in our self-interest. We're equipped to do so. Let's just do it. So I've been trying to write op-eds, for example, in the Christian Science Monitor in August last month about understanding the Pashto Islamic mindset along the Afghanistan-Pakistan border. And I've sent that to my friends at the Pentagon and in NATO at pretty high levels to say we need a different approach here because religion is the prism through which the Muslim in that part of the world sees all of life, as it should be for Christians if you believe God is sovereign. He's not just some little second, some sector, something you do on Sunday. He is a part of everything that you do in all aspects of life every day. Monday is the beginning of worship for the Muslim, as it should be for Christians. So how do we understand that? And we just have a very tough time engaging it. So we're trying to meet with people at the State Department, National Security Council, publish these opinion pieces, our website, our journal, the Review of Faith International Affairs, the only one of its kind in the world, that's being distributed. So we send it out as many ways as possible, but it's a long road because the mindset has to change, and God has been educated out of the analytical mindset in our top international relations schools and in other places, and it takes some time to begin to change that because we're scared to talk about religion and politics.
And I'm going to give a little station ID here. Folks, you're listening to the Freedom Eagle 104.3 FM. I'm David Allen Carmichael. This I call my Faith and Freedom Show. We're talking to Dr. Chris Seipel. He is with the Institute for Global Engagement, and I'm addressing this issue with regard to the Pakistan-Afghan region crisis issue. We got a lot of war going on over there, and nobody's really paying attention to it. So I want you to tune in and see what Dr. Seipel's perspective is and the kind of salt and light he's trying to shed, and I think a very critical situation in the world and for our country that's going on and for other people. And it's going to affect our future. It's definitely going to affect our future. Dr. Chris, recently the American general in Afghanistan, General Stanley McChrystal, he said that we must win the people or we will lose the war. And that's not an exact quote. That's kind of a synopsis of the point he was making. There are infrastructure projects that NATO forces are working on that are essentially, as you look at it, they're acts of neighborly love. Now, do you think that machine of war can effectively act as a good neighbor. And then, you know, if not, what's it going to take?
Yeah, that's a great question, David. And it really gets to the nub of American engagement in the world and then success in a place like Afghanistan. At the end of the day, the military, you can't win this with weapons. You have to win this by winning the, quote, proverbial hearts and minds. The question is, how do you do that? In a overwhelmingly Muslim-majority country that is extremely conservative, very orthodox, lowercase o, very devout in their faith, you have to find ways to root all of your programs and actions in how they understand justice. We love to talk about freedom, right? That's part of our lexicon. Freedom in the Muslim world is often heard as licentiousness.
Right.
You're going to fight to give me freedom to Madonna over the dish?
Right.
My kids can see that. They don't want any part of it. There's actually a lot of common values between conservatives here and conservatives there. So the word that they use, and it's also part of the Christian lexicon, we just don't emphasize it as much, but, for example, James 5 talks about it, or all of James talks about it, but the idea of justice. What does justice look like? What does mercy and justice look like? And compassion. These are things that are words that the Muslim world uses. So we have to get our programs, our governance programs at the local level, building the schools, etc., in a way that they understand that this is in keeping with an Islamic mindset. This is in keeping with the very best of Islam. Oh, by the way, it's in the keeping with the very best of Christianity. And if you do that over time, you will have a change of heart because they will say, hey, the Taliban, that's not real Islam. Al-Qaeda, that's not real Islam. All they do is kill fellow Muslims. That is a violation of the teaching of the Quran. So that's the way to do it. But on the super practical side, this is my former Marine infantry officer coming out now. The military is doing this, but the problem for our country is they become the piggy bank and the piggyback.
Yeah.
We're paying for all of it, and military's job is breaking things, but you need something that builds things, and the military can build it in the short term to demonstrate credibility and legitimacy and that we're not here to harm. But who's going to come in and truly build things? The rest of the interagency, as we say in Washington here. What is State Department? What is Agency for International Development? What is Department of Justice and FBI and all these other elements of our national power? What are they doing? And we have not figured out how to operationalize them in a way that comes alongside the government in Afghanistan in a coordinated fashion. And I think that's the real issue as we go into the 21st century is, hey, our military can do it. They're smart. They've got the money. But you know what? You're killing them. You're overburdening them. Let them do what they're supposed to do, provide the security so other people can do the justice and the governance and all those kinds of issues and build the schools and let the nonprofit NGOs like World Vision, Save the Children, let them come in a secure environment. But we just don't have that coordination yet, and that's the number one issue. That issue alone will define whether we achieve success or not, along with the second issue, which is can the Afghan government stop their own corruption and work with our interagency folks.
Hmm. Dr. Chris Seipel, Institute for Global Engagement. It's well worth checking it out. It's globalengage.org. Don't just sit and listen to the in-flight entertainment. Again, folks, I mean, what you're going to see on mainstream media isn't going to get to this kind of substance. So check out globalengage.org. The other thing is I want you to check out, and you can type it in on Google, Religious Freedom, The Ultimate Counterterrorism Weapon. It's a superb one-hour discourse. Well, it's a one-way communication for the most part. But it's Dr. Chris Seipel laying out some things that he's doing, the vision that they have. And really, your organization, I guess from its founding, was if we can establish, anybody can just establish the religious freedom, as you said, in Rhode Island, the perspective they had. Samuel West, he sent a letter to the delegates that went to the to figure out whether they're going to declare independence back in 1776. I read his writing, and in it, it talked about toleration in that you don't oppress the Turk, he called him, or the Papist or whatever, and even in the founding documents of America, it says if you know basically the way false religions happen on the earth is by putting the power of the sword behind the influence of it. I guess as I see your organization, it's really something you said, you called it a level playing field. In other words, make sure you secure religious freedom under the rule of law, and in the various cultures will honor it, so that we will have a, I guess, de-escalate. So, I mean, you could probably articulate that better. What, I mean, really?
Good, David. That was pretty good. Yeah, religious freedom at the end of the day is a big tent issue. In this polarized age of Republicans and Democrats, Americans and the rest of whatever you want to say, everybody's yelling at each other. That's going to get us absolutely nowhere. If you're a secular fundamentalist at the UN or the State Department, you can care about religious freedom because it's in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, Article 18, freedom of conscience. If you're an American patriot and you know your history like you obviously do, David, and can cite these kinds of letters from West and Roger Williams and George Mason, you got to get behind religious freedom, no matter whether you're Republican or Democrat. And here's the kicker. If you're a person of faith, especially of the Abrahamic tradition, a Jew, a Muslim, or a Christian, and especially for those of us who are Christian, this is a kingdom theology of loving the neighbor. God has given us the freedom to reject his son. It's the ultimate proof for me that he's God. What God in the world says, I'm going to let you reject me if you want to? Nobody except the living God of history. And he commands us to love God and love our neighbor. All of the law can be reduced to just that. And so if that's the command, then we've got to figure out how to do it. But religious freedom allows us to work with others who don't believe as we do, such that we can live out the faith and live out the command to love our neighbor as a coalition, working in difficult and complex places like Afghanistan and Pakistan. It's the only thing that makes work sense to me, the principled pluralism of a public square that is neither naked nor sacred, simply civil according to the very best of our values. Let me add one more thing, David. The other guy who believed in this stuff was John Locke. He's at the heart of our democratic, lowercase d, capitalist free market system. He is the one who lays the philosophical foundations for rule of law, property ownership, etc. In his treatise on tolerance in 1692, one of the opening sentences is, the chief true characteristic mark of the church is tolerance. Hmm. That is who we are as Christians and as believers. And not just tolerance, but respect and love of neighbor. All of this is hand in glove together to produce a society that protects and promotes the minority. It's an equal opportunity to participate at the same table. And that's as good as it gets in the fallen world.
And that is essentially the perspective of rule of law in America, that I'm going to quote Sir William Blackstone, sort of, it'll be close, that the purpose of government is to protect the weaker members of our society from the insults and injuries of the stronger. And just a little trivia, I have John Locke's two treatises of government. I actually reached down and picked it up right while you were speaking. He says, because men are vicious, corrupt, and degenerate, we have need of government. So this is just fun, okay? I'm just spun up here. Thank you, Dr. Chris. Now we're about ready to take a break here on the Faith and Freedom Show. Sorry for the abrupt halt there. This is interesting. Now this guy, Chris Seiple, Institute for Global Engagement. Is he a globalist? I don't think he's a globalist. It sounds pretty nasty. I think he's a guy who's out there fulfilling his call, his vocation, his calling. And he happened to get invited to a club, the Council on Foreign Relations. And I wonder, you know, I've been thinking, what if he got invited to one of those meetings and to sit up there with some of those folks, with Madeleine Albright and other people who are trying to figure out what a global societal norm is supposed to be. Yeah, who is global societal norm anyway? You know, I know my son, I'm starting to call him Outdoor Ed because he's involved with Outdoor Education. So who is global societal norm? But I don't, okay, a little entertainment. Hey, we're going to take a break. You guys come back. Give us a call at 888-850-1872. We'll have a short segment again of Chris Seiple. What do you think about somebody who's involved on the Council on Foreign Relations? Ooh. Give you the heebie-jeebies. We'll be back.